This is Glenn Coble, and we're in the middle of a program we call On the Air, and we're here with James Anderson, who is the Marion naturalist, Marion County naturalist. He knows everything there is to know about critters, and I'm not going to go hanging with him, though, because he likes them. I like them. I just don't want to be near them. All right. James, one of the things, and James is back on the air with us. One of the things I wanted to talk about is invasive species that are in the area. What are the worst of the bunch?
So if you're not familiar with an invasive species is, it's a plant or animal that is introduced into another area, rather on purpose or on accident, and then is causing environmental harm. A lot of our invasive plants, they were brought over here on purpose because either for ornamental purposes, the landscape industry, like model flora rose, we brought over because when we went over in China, we saw that, hey, you
beautiful.
Know, well, they're beautiful, and they use it for a natural fence row.
So,
you know, there's not many fence posts, there's not many fence out in China because, you know, it's a very thick bush and not many livestock or people would like to travel, you know, through that model flora. So they said, well, let's bring it here to the United States. And that's a great example of one that was brought on purpose. Even for the longest time, your local extension agent would actually recommend you planting it on your property.
That's kind of interesting. Now, we have burning bush, and I understand that's a oriental bring over.
Not a non-native. So yeah, we have a lot of non-native plants here in the state of Ohio, and a few of them have gotten over controlled and now considered invasive species.
And the nice thing about them is there are no critters that will eat them. I mean,
very few.
So they grow and grow and grow. Unfortunately, they spread and spread and spread.
Yes, like bush honeysuckle. That's probably the worst of the worst. All of our
it's
parks
everywhere.
And right now, if you go at Marion Tallgrass Trail, it looks like it's producing a bunch of these red berries, and you might be thinking to yourself, oh, it's providing food for the animals, that's great. Well, like I tell kids, it's like candy. You like candy, right? But is candy really good for you? No. So it's actually providing a lot of empty nutrition.
Robins,
cardinals, a bunch of animals. And actually, what's probably like with the robins, a lot of robins migrate south, and some do stay during the winter season, but if they see all these berries, then a lot of robins will say, well, hey, let's stay here in Marion instead of migrating south. And then if you get a harsh winter, well, there goes your local robin population.
Yikes. I thought robins, I knew that they went away during the winter, but I thought they just went deeper into the woods. They actually do migrate to some degree.
And then there are some, like what you said, they do kind of change habitat spots. They're not more they're not as common to see. They kind of hide in very like thick areas.
But they're not like ducks that go miles and miles and miles.
No.
I assume ducks go all the way.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Now, kudzu or something like that, that's a terrible invasive plant.
Yes, right? Luckily, knock on wood, there's only been a few cases in Ohio, but mainly towards the Ohio River.
Yeah, it's down south.
But other than that, it hasn't crept very far. But, yeah, it's a very nasty invasive vine. And that one was brought over on purpose, too.
Really?
Because when we were building the railroad industry, as you probably learned in history, you know, there was a lot of the Asians who were, you know, building the railroad. Well, they brought over, you know, the things from their home country. Well, kudzu was one of them. And so they would actually use it for edible medicinal purposes. And then they, you know, would throw it out. Well, guess what they threw out? They threw out seeds.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, this vine has just overtaken, especially in the southern portion of the United States, like Kentucky and West Virginia.
Well, one of the things that started us talking off the air about native or non-native species is this moth or whatever that – it's a beautiful animal.
Yes,
but
a spotted lanternfly.
And Charlie used to hate it.
Yes, and he mentioned it a lot on his program, especially in 2019. And
what's the name again?
Spotted lanternfly.
You showed me a picture of it. It's a
gorgeous
handsome critter.
Right now it's been – hitting Pennsylvania, especially eastern Pennsylvania, the hardest. It's kind of like the ash borer, but it kind of sounds worse, and I actually didn't know anything about it. Charlie actually introduced me to the subject, and he would send me articles through Facebook, or when I came to his program, he would show me newspaper clippings. But
he was a well-read guy.
Oh, he was. He was very sharp. Yeah. But it's attacking not only wild trees, it's also attacking orchards, like apple trees. It's affecting, you know, crops like corn and soybeans. So if we don't get this under control, I mean, it's really going to cause a lot of damage. And I was telling you earlier, with the emerald ash borer, just the timber industry, it cost about $1.7 billion worth of damages.
Yeah, and you think, well, we chopped them all down, they'll go away. But yes. No other critters, or they're having to eat other stuff.
Yeah, because you have to adapt. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're starting to notice the ash borers are starting kind of focus on maples and buckeyes. Right now, as of right now, they're not at an alarming rate, but before too long, like you said, they got to eat.
Yeah, yeah. Nature has its way.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
It gets rid of good stuff as well as bad stuff.
Yeah.
Especially if you bring in non-native species. Now, one of the things that you and I were talking about off the air, I watch a show called Growing a Greener World, and they were talking about how the non-native species, can, like the burning bush, they can live longer because the critters that would eat it at home, they aren't around.
Yes, so there's nothing really to control them. Yeah.
Yeah, so
absolutely.
What other are there other animals that are in space invasive?
Oh yeah, house sparrows, European starlings.
House sparrows?
Yes, they're originally from Europe.
They're everywhere.
Yes, and you know how they were introduced, don't you?
No.
So
came across on the Mayflower.
Yeah, something like that. It's between Edward Allan Poe and. Shakespeare.
Now, Poe had ravens. He didn't have
Well, there was one of, I guess somebody said about a starling, I think he mentioned. But anyhow, in the eastern portion of the U.S., like New York and all those places, after they would be done with their production or their play, they would release these birds, and then voila, that's how they ended up in the state of Ohio.
Oh,
and they
my.
Think by 1869, the first house sparrow was spotted in Ohio, and then by 1916, the first European starling was spotted in Coshocton County.
They probably thought they were doing a good thing by releasing these birds and not euthanizing them, but they were in fact that type of sparrow, are there bad things that it does?
Oh yeah, they will kill native birds and they'll outcompete for a nesting site.
They're so small.
But you know, actually funny, the house sparrow is not really a sparrow. It's actually a type of finch in Europe.
Okay.
So think like the goldfinches you see around.
Yeah.
They're more closely related.
We have a lot of goldfinches that live around that sunflower plot that I talk about.
Oh, they love sunflowers.
They must, because at a certain time of the year, it's right on my walk, and I'll walk by it, and they'll just fly up.
Yeah.
I mean, like 20 or 30 of them.
Like a little flock,
I love watching them. But are they native?
Yeah. The goldfinches are native.
So I won't call them bad names.
So but the problem is when you get like goldfinches and cardinals and bluebirds, they're trying to make their nest. Well, then the house sparrow's like, well, hey, I'm gonna go and I'm gonna take over your nest, and
lovely,
and my girlfriend's gonna move in, she can put her babies here. And some natives can fight back, and others just like, okay, or sometimes the house sparrow will kill them.
I've noticed a lot of blue jays, and I can't imagine a blue jay allowing a house sparrow to take.
No, they're a little bit bigger, and also blue jays are a little bit more on the intelligent side, so I think they could really outsmart.
They're pretty aggressive.
Oh yeah, they'll attack people.
I sit out in my backyard after I've done my walk and occasionally have a beer. And we have several this year. Probably, I would guess, we have three pairs that are in the neighborhood. Not all. We only have one pair that's right by our house.
Okay.
I imagine they don't like other pairs coming.
Oh, no. They're very territorial.
But we do have, and I'll see them. And they will come around and they will scream at me.
Oh, yeah, they're like, Jay, what are you doing in my yard? Yeah, that's how they got part of their name. Yep, because they,
is that right?
Yep, because they scream out Jay.
Yeah, and it is a scream. It's not a pleasant talk.
No, no.
Now, they must have other calls because I've seen them do other calls.
Yes, yeah. They actually will sometimes mimic red-tailed hawks.
Really?
And so what they do is, especially at a bird feeder station, they'll imitate the hawk. Sure. Little birds are like, oh, no, there's a predator, and they'll fly away, and the blue jay's, ah, it's my food now.
Now, I have another place that I walk by. There's inundated with squirrels because the man puts out seeds for the birds.
Yeah. Yep.
And he doesn't have any way to stop the squirrels. You know, some places they'll put
squirrel-proof feeders.
Right. And he doesn't do that. So the other day I was walking by and I said, do you know how to keep those squirrels off your seeds? And he said, well, we've tried everything. Nothing works. Well, I had heard on that program that I watch every Saturday morning that if you put what is it? It's a pepper.
Cayenne pepper.
Yep,
and Tabasco sauce.
And I told him to do that. Now, I don't know if he did or not, but I haven't seen too many squirrels around there.
I actually recommend that to a lot of people.
Is that right?
If they have problems.
Yeah, and the squirrels are remarkably adapt at getting into those places.
They sure are. I love the ones. I don't know if you
remember when Hillary Clinton came to Marion in 2016.
Yes, I do. I stood outside of the Harding Hotel in the rain waiting to get an interview that didn't happen.
You know why she chose the Harding Hotel to meet?
No, I don't.
Well, they used to have a hair salon in the lobby, and she could sure use it.
Here we go again. WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
All right, back here. I was getting one of those robocalls.
I love them.
Got to figure out how to get out of it. So, sorry, I was a little late getting back here. Okay, we were talking about those squirrels getting into. They can do all sorts of stuff. What you were talking about the
spin feeders.
Yeah.
You can buy those at like Lowe's or Menards or what. But they sit on them and then they spin and then they go whoop, they fly
off. Them off.
Oh, yeah. And then I've seen people do this before that, like on a pole, if you have a bird feeder station that on a pole, if you put a slinky, the old traditional metal slinkies, and then as that squirrel's climbing up and then shoop, yes.
I've seen a lot of videos on YouTube or whatever of all sorts of ways people have tried to stop squirrels.
Oh, yeah.
Most of them don't work, but some of them do.
Yep.
All right. Where were we going with this? Oh, we were talking about that critter that's coming across
the spotted lanternfly. Yeah, the first one I just saw it on Facebook. First one was spotted in Jackson County, which is I believe in southeastern Ohio.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Unfortunately,
from where you and I were haunting.
That's right.
For a while.
So let's hope it doesn't make it through here and make it in Marion County. So.
Is there anything, speaking of haunting, is there anything that kids should watch out for on Halloween night? Now, you don't have to be afraid of bats, right?
No.
Now, are there still bats in the air now?
There's some, but most of them are migrated.
Yeah, okay. Now, I have told you the story about one brushing by me.
Oh, yes, I do
because
remember
I
that,
was
yes.
Suffering from landlubber's disease. I had been on a sailboat for 5 days, and my legs weren't working, and I kind of bumped into him instead of him into me.
Got your sea legs.
Yeah, yeah. But now, he didn't do anything. It just kind of, his wing brushed against my hair.
Yeah.
It scared me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It would make me jump.
Yeah, it did. You don't really like to have critters in your hair. Now, he didn't get in my hair. He just brushed against me. Oh, so there's nothing kids need to worry about on Halloween night about...
most of the time the kids are screaming, having a good time. Those animals are like, oh, no.
Raccoons aren't going to mess with them.
No, for the most part. Now, I mean, you may see one, like, traveling, but I mean, none of them are going to be going up to kids and attacking them.
So the food, the candy doesn't attract animals.
Well, I mean, it can, but...
If you drop it on the ground.
Yeah.
All right, cool. That's good to know. And this year, Halloween is going to be on the 31st, as it always is here in Marion, from 5:30 to 7:30. And make sure your little critters are protected. You know, they got a mask on anyway, so why not cover their nose and mouth? Anyway, I hope they have a great time. I don't even remember Halloween. I remember one Halloween when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah?
Because it snowed.
Okay.
And it really wrecked our Halloween. We were
freezing.
Well,
that's rememberable.
Yeah. And I lived in Crawfordsville, Indiana, so I must have been 5 years old.
Oh, wow.
One of my early memories. Oh, all right. So are people still coming out to the Tallgrass Trail?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Probably not in much of the colder snaps, but boy, like last week when those warmer snaps we had, I was seeing up to 30 cars in our parking lot.
30 cars?
I mean, that's just a trailhead.
20 snakes.
Yeah, 20 snakes. And I mean, you know, we do have the other parking spots along the trail, so I mean, there could have been well over 100.
Where are
people.
The other?
So we have, I'm going to say, is it five? So we have the trailhead, and then we have at the Her Road at the lake.
Okay, yeah.
And then as of right now, the Portage on restroom's there, but then I think probably the next couple weeks we're going to get rid of that restroom until next spring.
There are parking places at the Her Road?
If you go on Her Road, and we have our little, it's just a little gravel parking lot.
Okay.
Right. So you can park there. So if you just want to do fishing, canoeing, kayaking, or just want to start there at the lake, that's another area. The next spot is the 203 Big Island Wildlife Area. It's not technically our parking lot, but it's the state of Ohio's. But since, you know, it's the state, it is a public parking lot.
Yeah.
And then the next one is the Epsifield Road, the Epsifield Baptist Church.
Okay.
They made an agreement that people can park there. They just ask on Sundays and Wednesday nights. Not much, because if you've ever been to that church, it's a very small church and a very small parking lot.
Yeah.
And you just have to walk just a quarter mile to the trail.
Okay.
And then the last one is out in D Cliff.
Toward the end of the trail?
Towards the end, yeah. It's at the 8.3 mile marker.
Okay, so you're about four miles short of the...
Till the end, yep. And then that's where we have another Portage on restroom. We have the shelter house that Tri Rivers built. So we have some stuff right there at the end. So
cool.
Those are the only parking spots we have along the Tallgrass Trail. As of now, hopefully in the future, if we have a private person who's private property adjacent to the trail, maybe one day would donate. We'll see.
But. Yeah. I've had two thoughts about the trail. I think about the trail, and I hope that it continues to grow and be better and better.
Yes.
And the two thoughts that I have, and you may already have done this, do you have people coming out doing cross-country skiing on it?
On skiing? No. Well, kind of yes and no. I've seen a couple people, but not many.
Yeah, okay. That's something that I always thought might work. Why in the world anybody wants to walk on skis in the middle of the winter, I have no idea. But it's pretty flat, so you won't be gliding anywhere.
But you
could also snowshoe.
I've seen one person do that before.
It probably is going to have to be if we have a deep snow, and we haven't had very many deep snows lately.
No.
And the other thing is a 5K or a 10K. I always thought that would be some way to...
We've had a lot of private organizations, companies who have done 5Ks for different causes, different reasons.
Okay.
Obviously, this year nothing happened because of everything going on. But we do have a 5K and 10K turnaround. So if you're training for one, say, in another location...
Yeah.
You can come out to the Marion Tallgrass Trail and train for a 5 or 10K.
The only problem I see is how do you start it? Because it's pretty narrow at the trailhead.
Well, we have a start sign for both the 5 and 10K right there at the trailhead. Right,
I'm talking if you get a big, you know, 200 people.
Oh, I see. I see what you're saying. I don't know.
They could start out of the parking lot
there. Yeah, yeah. And then hopefully if the trail expands, then we could have a marathon.
A marathon would be great fun.
Yeah, I forget what a marathon is, but I know we're not far away from
26.3 miles.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because if you do it from the trail and back, it's roughly about 25 miles.
Yeah, so you're close.
Yeah, we're close. Yeah, you just need an extra mile or two.
Well, you could have them start at you couldn't. I was gonna say you could have them start down at Whirlpool, but there's no way to get from Whirlpool without walking, doing it on the road. Yeah,
you know, it's actually funny why we're talking about the whole mileage thing at the Hocking Hills Trail. I found it's 12.3 miles and our trail is 12.4 miles, so we beat Hocking Hills by 1.1 of a mile.
I bet it's beautiful down there right now.
Oh, yes. I've seen a lot of people taking a lot of pictures, photographs.
Yeah. Now, the rain's probably knocked the leaves off some. But,
yeah.
That was one of the things that my wife and I miss about
My wife and I, too. We used to, since we lived in Nelsonville, we always travel to Hocking Hills.
And, you know, the trees aren't prettier down there than they are here, but you can see them better because they go up and down the mountains down there. Yeah. Now, I call them mountains,
but
they're really just very tall hills.
Yes. Yeah. They feel like mountains when you're climbing them.
Yeah, almost mountains.
You can call them mini mountains.
Mini mountains, yeah. it is beautiful down there. Lake Logan.
Lake Hope.
Yeah, Lake Hope. Now, Lake Hope is a little flatter.
Yeah,
It isn't quite as pretty as Lake Logan. Lake Logan has lots of hills around it.
Yes, it does.
You ought to get down there if you're in this part of the country, nice flat land. Get down to Athens County, Hocking County. Is it Hocking?
Yeah, it's Hocking County.
Meigs County. Yeah. There's some beautiful.
Well, it's kind of funny. A couple weeks ago, when that really nice weekend we had, I had a friend that went down the Hocking Hills right there at the Old Man's Cave entrance. They said the mile just to get in to the entrance was almost 3 miles.
I can believe because that was right at the beginning of the color change.
Yes. Everybody had down the Hocking Hills.
Yeah. There are a lot of interesting comedy pieces written about why does anybody want to go watch a tree die? That tree's not dying and the leaves are passing away.
Yeah. The tree's preparing for hibernation.
That's right. Yeah. They're going to their maker. All right. Anything else that's going on in any of the parks that you
may? We actually have a special announcement that I have to read this because I just actually received this message just the other day.
We're not doing this too early. We still have.
Oh, we do. Oh, yeah. We'll save that. That's true.
Yeah,
save that
for the end.
kind of talking about with our fall foliage. Right now, I highly recommend checking out the sister parks. Checking out Teradise and Myers Woods. Teradise is the one outside of Caledonia, which we were mentioning that was Trella's property. Myers Woods was his. Charleston Myers, he was one of our judges. That was one of his properties that he donated. I really, really think they have probably the best fall foliage out of our parks.
Okay.
I love Tallgrass Trail, don't get me wrong, but I think Myers Woods is probably my favorite of our parks.
Okay. Is it kind of a little more hilly?
No.
Oh, it's
still flat, but it's very wooded.
Okay. The Tallgrass Trail is not wooded on the right side for half the
mile. Your first mile is pretty open, and then after that, and even though it's somewhat forested, but it's still because we're next to farm fields or the Big Island Wildlife Area, which is primarily prairie wetland region. So we're in what's called a forest corridor. So it's just a very thin line of trees. But versus Myers Woods, we're in a really thicket of trees.
Why is it important to save prairies? They're kind of bland and boring.
So prairies are just another type of habitat, and there's different kinds of prairies. There's the grass prairies, and then there's the four prairies, which include the wildflowers. And then, of course, there's some that are a mixture. With having different type of habitat, you're going to have different kinds of wildlife. There are a lot of wildlife that depend on the prairies. A lot of our sparrows species, a lot of our insect species really depend on prairies. And then within some prairies, especially like Big Island, you have prairies and wetlands that are mixing together. Yeah. So a lot of waterfowl, ducks, geese, swans, really, really depend on those types of habitats.
You probably can't walk through that area with tennies on, right?
I mean,
you should have boots.
You probably should have boots, especially right now with being extremely muddy. But during the summertime, I mean, I imagine you could probably wear tennis shoes.
Oh, okay. Now, I had something on my mind I was going to ask you about that. See, this is what happens. Don't get to be in your 70s.
All right, I'll try.
You start to, well, actually, it's better to be in the 70s than not be in the 70s, if you're supposed to be in your 70s. I'll remember that later.
You're having a senior moment.
I am having a senior moment. I'm also having a moment where I think you brought in some goldenrod on your shoes or something.
I'm getting surprise
all stopped
name.
Up. Now, is that still out? Are we still having allergies from outside?
A little bit. Mainly the goldenrod is depleted. The pollen is. Mainly what you're seeing right now, if you're looking at goldenrods, is the seeds.
Oh, okay.
All right. If you want to plant goldenrods, you can plant some. Grab some seeds and put it on your property.
Now, I assume that's not an invasive species.
No. Now, kind of talking about that.
All right.
Some like goldenrods, they're native, but there's some that are what's called aggressive.
Oh.
So that means that they can kind of overtake. So when I was telling people when I used to work at Natives in Harmony, so you got to kind of keep an eye. If you kind of leave it alone, then it will overtake. But as long as you kind of manage it up a little bit, you can put some other stuff in between the goldenrods.
Okay. I just remembered what I was going to talk about.
Oh, okay.
And it has to do with goldenrod, I guess. All right. That lady that you were talking about that sells native plants.
Yeah.
Does she also sell, let me ask you after we get through this break.
Sounds good.
Charlie, do you remember when Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood came to visit us?
Yes, I do. All three times. What a great time we had.
Yes, riding in the popcorn parade twice with him was great.
He made more speedy deliveries that day than the post office does all year.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
We're back here. We're here with, I'm Glenn Coble. You're listening to On the Air, and we're talking with James Anderson, who is the Marion County naturalist, and he's telling us all sorts of good stuff today, but I want to tell him something. I watch, and I mentioned this earlier, I watch a program on, I think it's Saturday morning, Growing a Greener World. It might be, it's Saturday morning, and it's on WOSU's 43.3, I can't remember the name of the host, but they give all sorts of good ideas of how to grow naturally and stuff like that. But one of the things he was talking about 2 weeks ago was building your own prairie in your yard. And I thought, well, yeah, I'd love to do it, but my yard's a city yard. It's not that big. He said you can build a prairie that's 12 feet or 1 yard by 1 yard square, just a little tiny prairie. And one of the problems with that is, well, what do you put in a little tiny prairie like that? But I thought maybe if I could get that lady that you were talking about with her maybe wildflowers, you know, you could just sprinkle seed in a little round area.
You could, but not what she focuses on a lot. They're already grown for you, so a lot of them are tiny little, like, small size
plants. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, yeah, prairies can be very small, or of course they can be many, many acres. Like when you go to Big Island Wildlife Area, I mean, there are hundreds of acres.
What is the description of a prairie? How would you say that's a prairie and that's not a prairie?
Well, that's a good question.
Okay, go back to class now.
So I guess the easiest way for prairie is, I guess you're going to have, you know, tall herbaceous plants.
Okay.
That's one big thing you don't want a lot of is woody vegetation.
Okay.
So trees. Yeah. So there can be a tree here and there, but overall you just want your herbaceous grasses or those wildflowers.
Do they have to be wetlands or not?
No. There are dry prairies, but Big Island is just kind of that example since it's kind of in the mixture of wetland and prairie mixtures.
Now, there are a lot of prairies up by Lake Erie, aren't there?
There's some. There's more wetlands
up there.
The term for those kinds of habitats for the prairie wetland are called prairie potholes.
Huh.
And again, that's a really great habitats for waterfowl.
Okay.
Because the grass kind of keeps them hidden. Sure. They can find food. And, of course, there's water to keep them safe and, you know, duck doing what a duck loves.
Is there anything that a person that lives in a city can do to give protection for the little critters?
Oh yeah, there's absolutely countless of things you can do.
Okay, let's start.
So as we talked about earlier, which, and I know it's sometimes not the most attractive thing, but, you know, leaving the leaves at this time of year,
I'm gonna do some of that.
And I know a lot of us rake them up and put them in piles or put them in the corner where the city can come through and sweep them up,
right?
And as we mentioned, that's where a lot of these animals hide. Now, you can rake some. Like I always tell people, especially during the migration season, if you do a little raking, the bugs actually get stirred up, and then the birds are like, oh, hey, there's a male.
Well, I'm going to use leaves to mulch all three of four. I have four little gardens. I'm going to use leaves to mulch those.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Because you'll do that, you probably won't put any type of chemicals in.
Right.
I know we've mentioned that in your earlier shows. Definitely, that's probably the biggest thing. It's just don't apply any type of chemicals, pesticides, herbicides. I mean, any of those things, even though they may say environmentally friendly.
Yeah, a lot of them do. They kind of tease you.
Yeah, and you know what I always I learned this from a workshop, and I tell people this. If you can't find it in nature, then no, it's not really environmentally friendly.
Okay.
Because we don't really know the true effects. Now, if it is a material or a substance that can be found in nature, then yes, you could. Because there are some funguses out there that they have used to put on controlling insects, and that's a natural way to get rid of insects.
Okay. Now, so if you could probably look on the ingredients, and if it's a name you can't spell.
Yeah, it's kind of like food, you know, when you get those really long words you can't even pronounce. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't use them, no.
Okay. All right, so there is, like, I've found a little critter, as a matter of fact, in my perennial garden. The nice thing about it is I still have some pretty flowers, and I'll cut them off for my wife and put them in the kitchen. I found a little critter that was about an inch long, green caterpillar.
Okay.
And I didn't want to kill him, so I took him off of and threw him outside.
Okay,
but,
well, that's good.
But you forget, you can't see a lot of these critters.
Yes, some of them are really small.
So anything you do, you could be killing the little critters.
No, you're absolutely right.
We have a phone call. Let's go to the phone and see what's going on. Hi, you're on the air. How can we help you?
This is Martha Dalsmanese. Who am I talking to?
This is Glenn Coble, and you're on the air with Glenn and also with James Anderson, the naturalist from Marion County.
You're kidding.
No, uh-uh. Do you have a question for him?
I want to tell you, God is great, and so is WGA.
All right. That's what we love to hear. And if I recall correctly, you're the lady that has the dance studios and stuff like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Dallas.
Yeah.
D-O-U-C-E. You spell Dance, D-A-N-C-E.
Okay.
All right. My dad gave me that name as my maiden name.
All right.
Isn't that neat?
That is. That is.
And I've danced for 77 years,
wow,
and I still can do the Cupid Shuffle.
That's great. My wife was a dancer. She went to college. She actually went to college to be a social worker, but her minor was in dance, so she probably could dance with you. But
there's nothing like dancing.
Uh-huh.
And I tell people, if you got 3 feet, I can't help you.
Well, I have 2 left feet, so I don't dance very well.
Well, you can hop.
You got a right one and a left one.
All right. Well,
a right one, and I call the left wrong.
The wrong one. The right one and the wrong one. All right. Well, now, I took ballet for 2 years when I was in high school so that I could.
Did you?
Yeah. It helped my football, and it also helped. We took ballet so that we could be in West Side Story, and that's.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
That's good to know.
I was terrible, though, at dance.
Now, do you work for Scott?
Yeah, sure do.
Well, you're special. Are you on right now?
Yes, we're on the air.
I can't. Somebody turned my radio down, and they turned it to the wrong station.
Oh, no.
Now I don't have you on the radio.
Well, we're going to have to get
I got a station from Mansfield.
Oh, well, maybe you can get a friend to come over and get you tuned back in. It's 107.1. It's pretty easy to find. It's up at the high end of your dial.
And my radio that my granddaughter got me last year pulls it in real good.
Oh.
And I've tried to have it on, but I can't get you.
Okay, well, see if you can't call a friend or just fiddle with it and make sure the dial's up towards the high end.
Am I on now?
Yes, you are.
Well, I want to tell everybody in Marion County, happy, happy Halloween.
Well, happy Halloween to you,
happy
too.
Happy Halloween.
And thanks for calling in. It sounds like you're at a basketball game and your team isn't winning.
Well, I tell you, you're wonderful. And what's your first name?
Glenn. Call me anytime, yeah. I'm on Wednesday and Thursdays. So I'm
what
on with
time?
Scott on Wednesday morning. I'm sorry?
What time?
My show on both days starts at 10:15 and runs till about 1 o'clock. So.
Oh, I'll be listening to you.
Excellent.
Then.
If we can get your radio tuned.
Well, I'm going to call you all the time.
Okay, excellent. That's what we need.
I know 383-9944.
You got it. Hey, thanks for calling in today. Let me get back with James on we're talking about critters, you know, spooky critters.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling in.
Okay, I love you.
I love
Bye-bye.
You too. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, that was nice. She's called in to Scott's show quite often,
yeah.
But this is the first time she's called into my show, and I'm glad we got her. She's a real natural, kind of an icon. She's been important to Marion for a long time, and these dance studios that she has more than one that she runs. I think she has 3. I'm guessing. But she can't call me up and tell me I'm wrong because she can't figure out how to get a radio. Hey, if you know her and you're live close to her, run over there and help her tune her radio, okay? 107.1. Okay, we've got about 3 minutes left to go, maybe 4, and let's get to your special announcement.
All right. Sounds good. So the Marion Community Foundation, which we have partnered throughout the many, many years, and without them, we definitely would not have Marion Tallgrass Trail. They've helped us out with a lot of different projects and programs, but they have a healthcare fund. And what they're basically going to do is they're going to help improve the lake or the trail around the lake, the Marion Community Foundation Lake, and we'll be adding a limestone screening layer to the currently loose gravel. So they'll be basically make it more accessible for strollers, wheelchairs, bicycles.
It is a little rough.
Yeah, because especially on the east side, it's a little rough, and then on the west side, it's really muddy. So with having this special limestone around the lake, it's going to make it more accessible for everybody. So again, we really like to thank the Marion Community Foundation for helping us out with this project. This project, it will probably take place, I would say, in late winter or early spring of 2021.
Late winter or early spring? Okay.
Yes, at least that's the goal.
Next year.
Yes, yeah, next year.
Okay. So. That will be neat. I don't usually take that trail just because it is kind of rough.
Yeah.
And I'm getting older, and my ankles, I ripped them up so many times in football and track that I turn my ankles pretty easily. Yeah. So I don't go. We did walk around it when I went with you on
that one time. Yeah, that's right, we did.
And that's it is kind of different. It's kind of fun to walk around it. But it
you get a different view.
What does it add to your walk if you're out that way?
Especially on the
quarter mile?
When you go around, it's from there to back to the trailhead, it's about 2.3 miles.
Okay, so, I'm not sure. It might be more than like a half mile. Just the little loop.
Yeah, just the loop itself. It's 0.08 miles.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it's a nice little trip, and that's where you introduced me to my very first bald ego stared at me.
That's right. We had a staring contest.
Yeah, it did. All right. Well, we're down to the last minute. If you've got anything else you got to get in. Do it now.
All right. So November 5th, trash pickup program. Then we'll start the trailhead. That's at 10 a.m. Later on, fall color cycle, the Greensboro Nature Preserve at 4 o'clock p.m. On November 11th, terrific turkeys program at the Tallgrass Trail trailhead at 4 o'clock p.m. and a bird watching program at Tallgrass Trail, but we'll be starting at the Epsifield Baptist Church at 8 o'clock in the morning. So please remember, if you would like to participate, you must register on our social media accounts, Facebook, Instagram, whatever, or our office phone number, 740-223-4161.
Yeah, and James went through that real fast because he knows he's running out of time.
Yes.
But if you need that information, I'm sure it's on your website.
Yeah, correct? We just put it on.
Yep.
So, and then we're going to give the schedule to Glenn. So.
All right, excellent. And we'll be announcing it. Thanks a lot, James. And
thanks, Glenn.
We're going to get out of here. Bye-bye.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LP Marion, Ohio, The Talking Place, 107.1 FM. From Charlie Evers.
You know, you could come in handy, too, with that electricity if we have problems with our transmitter, which is above you.
I know.
Yeah. All you'd have to do is raise your hands and energize our transmitter.
To formerly of WNCI, Weasel Boy. Is that true? I've never asked that question on air before, by the way, but...
I can tell.
I wasn't even sure how to word it.
When the way your arms got going, I forgot.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
he's
yeah.
never asked anybody that question.
No, I wouldn't even know. To 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, do you think he needed her after that primary election?
Yes, and I think I go back to Abraham Lincoln when it's the... You bring your enemies close.
That was... Mm-hmm. Had you ever seen a primary like that in your life?
You mean Abraham Lincoln?
You weren't there for that one. You weren't there for that one.
I read the book.
Hillary and Obama. WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495.
webpage, crtmechanicals.com.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from the Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday at 5:15 and replay again on Wednesday at 3:15. We take pertinent issues of the day going on and look at them in a biblical perspective. So we'd love to have you listen and just, you know, call in, just get a conversation going and have a great time on the show.
Pastor Steve Whitaker is the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. Address 209 East Water Street. This is Scott Spears, high above Marion in the WWGH News Chopper. If you see news in Marion, please email us at scott@wwgh1071.com and keep an eye out for the WWGH News Chopper flying high overhead.
This is Bill Macy, Walter, from the hit TV series Maud. WWGH107.1.com is where you find archives of WWGH radio. There are radio programs dating back to January 2016 and a live stream of the station itself. Go there now, or God will get you for that.
Programs on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM are brought to you by Williams Grass Cutters. Telephone number 740-272-0062. Website williamsgrasscutters.com. Facebook page at Williams Grass Cutters. Email w.grasscutters@gmail.com.
This is Earl Fitzamerican. You're listening to WWGH 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
The Marion Towers Apartments are a supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Address 400 Delaware Avenue. Phone number 740-387-9050. It's now time for the obituary report on WWGH Radio.
Holly Gamble, age 83, of Marion, passed away on Monday, October 26th at Heartland of Marion. He is survived by his wife, children, grandchildren, and siblings. Funeral service will be held Friday the 30th at the Snyder Funeral Home, 360 East Center Street, at 11 in the morning, with Pastor Paul Pretty. Burial will follow in Marion Cemetery. You may leave an online condolence at SnyderFuneralHomes.com. For Holly Gamble of Marion. Donald Keith Morris, age 81, of Marion, passed away on Sunday, October 25th at Marion General Hospital. He is survived by his wife, son, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Friends and family may call between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. on Monday, November 2nd at Marion First Church of the Nazarene. Funeral services will immediately follow the calling hours at 1 p.m. with Dr. Steve Estep officiating. The church is located at 233 West Church Street. You may leave an online condolence at BoydBourneFuneralHome.com. For Donald Keith Morris of Marion. Denver Klein Sr. of LaRue, age 69, passed away at his home on Monday, October 26th. He is survived by his children, grandchildren, and former children-in-law. Graveside services will be held on Friday, October 30th at 1 p.m. at the LaRue Cemetery. Pastor Russell Howard will officiate. The Stoffcheck Bollinger Funeral Home is handling arrangements for Denver Klein Sr. of LaRue. Pamela Ann Haley, age 63, of Marion, passed away on October 22nd. She is survived by her mother, siblings, sons, stepson, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. A showing will take place on Saturday, October 31st, between 10 a.m. and noon at All Souls Church in Greencamp, 228 Main Street. A celebration dinner will take place between 12:30 and 2:30 p.m. at the Shovel Lounge in Marion. You may leave an online condolence at cremationservicesofohio.com. For Pamela Ann Haley of Marion. Marsha M. Welch, maiden name Swartz, age 85, of Marion, passed away on Sunday, October 25th, at Kingston residence of Marion. She is survived by her son, daughter, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, nieces, nephews, and honorary family. Visitation will be on Thursday the 29th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Boyd Bourne Funeral Home, 122 West Columbia Street. Graveside services will take place Friday, October 30th at 2 p.m. at Chapel Heights Memory Garden.